Today on Compassion Radio.
You're trying to figure out, what am I doing with my life? And you know, you thought you had a plan, and then God's like, no, that's not your plan. And you're like, okay, God, if that's not my plan, then what is my plan? God, I need direction. Where do you want me to go?
Hello, and welcome to the Daily Radio Journal of Faith in Action. Even when that sometimes feels like inaction. Have you ever been there yourself? You say yes to God and then, well, a lot of unexpected waiting. Sometimes waiting itself can be the most trying job of all. Our guests today are Exhibit A in that long line of, but God, I said yes already, stories that pepper our history. Perhaps it's a story that you need to hear right now in your long season of waiting.
On Compassion Radio today, we're sitting down with two new friends to the ministry, people that we understand a little bit about because we've kind of been in their seats a couple of times in our lives as a ministry family. Travis and Becky Alessica, thanks so much for joining us today on Compassionate Radio.
Well, thank you for having us.
We're going to hear a story about a young family getting ready to head to the mission field because you're just getting ready over Christmas season 2023 to make the big leap overseas with your agency to be serving in a foreign country to us. But for you, you've been doing a lot of research and a lot of planning over the years to be ready for this. And I want to hear the story about how God brought you to this point and what he's putting in your heart getting ready for the mission field. So if you don't mind, Travis and Becky, just kind of introduce yourselves to us and let us understand where you come from, maybe how you've met, and how God put you together in this new venture.
Well, I grew up in a Christian household. Always knew that, you know, God had something for me. I didn't know what it was. But even though that was the case, I had the things that I wanted to do with my life. And I wanted to be an astronaut and be the first person on Mars.
I hear the job's still open.
Yeah, it's quickly being filled, but God had different plans for me. That was my plan from about the age of five. My family had a music ministry that we would travel around to different churches and we'd help lead worship. And I played bass guitar, ran sound. We would do that all my growing up, you know, late elementary, middle school, and high school. And we got a request one year to make about a 13-week tour. Everywhere we stopped along that tour, this was the summer between my junior and senior year, somebody had a word from the Lord for me.
Every time.
Every single stop that we made.
Interesting.
And these were people I had no prior contact with. And it was always, what you want to do with your life may not be what God wants you to do with your life. And I kind of was like, okay, whatever, great. Who are you? Go away. Type of thing. But it always kind of stuck in the back of my head. At one church, I picked up a flyer for Mission Aviation Fellowship. Mm. And I thought, man, that's cool. Missions work, serving God, airplanes.
Practically Mars.
Just about Mars, but not quite. And Mars is still a little bit of a better, you know, pursuit of my time, or so I thought.
Right.
So I continued on with what I was going to do. And I just stuck that flyer in my Bible and thought, one day when I'm rich and famous, I'll donate.
There you go.
Sorry, MAF, but, you know, that's... At the end of that tour, we were back down at a church in Northern California, and the pastor was giving the Wednesday night message and looked around the room and he's like, are there any teenagers in the room? And my sister and myself were the only ones there, only teenagers, because everybody else was out doing the high school thing. Mm-hmm. He looked right at me and he's like, I wish somebody would have told me this when I was your age, but what you want to do may not be what God wants you to do. And I just kind of broke down. I was like, okay, I guess I'm not being an astronaut. So I went back, finished my senior year of high school. I had put so much work into high school previous to that, that my senior year just kind of turned into a fun year. And then I started going to school, not knowing what I was going to do. All of my friends were going to the University of Nevada, Reno. So I decided, well, since my friends are going there, I'll go there. They had computers that I really wanted to work on, so I started in the computer science, electrical engineering track. After about a year at church, a missionary from Ecuador came up. That week, I'd been studying through Isaiah and came to Isaiah 6:8. I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And Isaiah's response was, send me, Lord. And I was like, God, that's me. Send me. I don't know where. I don't know what.
Did you feel like your heart was already open to this at that point, or just like a sudden shock to your system, like, wow, I really am saying yes?
No, I was definitely seeking. I was trying to figure out, you know, you're a second year college student, and you're trying to figure out, what am I doing with my life? And, you know, you thought you had a plan, and then, you know, a couple of years prior, God's like, no, that's not your plan. And you're like, okay, God, if that's not my plan, then what is my plan? It was just like, yeah, God, I need direction. I need, you know, where do you want me to go? So then later on that week, I was cleaning out my Bible and that brochure from MAF fell out. Mm-hmm. I thought, man, aviation, that's so cool, but I don't have any skills in aviation. I don't have any training. And a little blurb on it had IT, informational technology, you know, support work. I was like, well, I've got some training in that. And I set the brochure on my nightstand and wanted to think about this and pray about this a little bit more. So then that next Sunday at church, a missionary from Ecuador had come up and showing how he was going into and out of the village that he had a medical clinic in, and it was by airplane. It was just like, God just impressed on me. It was like, that's where I want you. I was like, great. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to do this.
You want me to fly what?
I wanted to do the flying, mm-hmm. but I knew that missionary work was what God wanted me to do. Mm-hmm. So I started looking into MAF with their IT, and I moved home for the summer, was living with my parents again and working with my dad, installing a garage door on a hangar out at the local airport. Saw the sign that said, learn to fly here. And my dad's just like, you've always wanted to. You're single. You don't have anything else going on in your life. If you're ever going to do something with this, now is the time.
And I suppose at the age you were, that's exactly the kind of encouragement you always would hope from a parent at that transition in your life.
Yeah.
Dream big.
Yeah. You know, you've always wanted to do something like this. Now is the time if you're ever going to do it. So I took the introductory flight lesson and I got done. It was like, yes, this is what I want to do. Computers are great, but this is it.
There's no barrel rolls when you're doing IT work, right?
No. I continued the private pilot license. As I was going through that, it was just like, I got into the books. I'd wake up, I would start studying. I would get up, I would go eat breakfast. I'd go for a flight lesson. I'd go to work. I would study while I was on lunch break. I'd get off of work. I'd go for a flight lesson. I'd go home. I would study.
And you never tired on this. I mean, it was like the juice was on. You're ready for this. You don't want to stop.
Oh, yeah. No. When I hit it at 110%. And it took about 6.5 months. Thankfully, I had very supportive parents with that, and they helped me through that. And it took 6.5 months to go from no flight time to a certified flight instructor. So that's private license, an instrument rating, a commercial license, and then a certified flight instructor license.
Okay, so that seems a little quick to me. Is that
it? Is
okay.
A normal school would do that in about 2 years.
Oh wow! You were motivated.
I was very motivated, and then since I was a certified flight instructor, I needed students, and where we were, there weren't many students. I taught my sister how to fly. And then I taught my parents how to fly.
Built-in students right there.
It's fascinating to me that all the members of your family decided to step up, not just to help you, because they apparently got the bug too.
Yes, and part of our family heritage or legacy, my grandfather was a World War II pilot. My dad's father, so my grandfather on my dad's side, was a World War II fighter pilot. And my grandfather on my mom's side was an Air Force mechanic. So we had aviation on both sides of the family.
As far as I know about your parents, pretty much both those specialties showed up in them as well over the years.
Yes. So I knew that I needed my pilot's license, but to be a missionary pilot, you also need maintenance licensing and Bible schooling. I was like, okay, where am I going to get maintenance schooling? And I found a school up in Anchorage, Alaska that I wanted to go to for maintenance. I get a job up there, and the summer of 2001... So I move up to Anchorage as a flight instructor, getting ready to start schooling. And then September 11th happens and shuts down aviation. So I move back home with my parents.
What was your first thought after it happened?
I don't think I really understood the impact of what had happened on September 11th for about 2 weeks. When our pastor finally made it back to church, because he was out in a remote village in Alaska, he hiked half a day out to the airstrip to meet the airplane. He had no satellite radio. He had no high-frequency radio. He had no communication. He just had a date and a time when he'd meet the airplane. So he walked out to the airstrip, and the airplane never showed up. He walked back, and for several days, he kept doing that until finally the airplane showed up, and they was able to bring him home. When he came back to church and he told us, you know, we all showed up to church one Sunday and nobody had heard from our pastor. We were all trying to figure out what is going on, and you know, we were all scrambling. And so when he finally shows up and tells us, you know, what had happened, and he'd found out about the attacks on September 11th, and we started putting the pieces together. And because aviation got shut down, he couldn't get his flight out of where he was ministering. So it wasn't until about that point in time that I really started realizing the impact of what had happened.
I imagine as your story evolves in the next 10, 20 years, that all the ramifications of what happened on 9/11 and all the choices made internationally with policy and wars being fought have had profound impacts on your future vision of your ministry, how God's calling you to the field. And I'm kind of curious about how that, all that stuff got rearranged in your heart and mind as God was resetting you, as resetting the world with all the stuff that's happened since.
I think it opened us up to not being as naive about security and safety as we were before that. Not just as a country, but, you know, as organizations. We started watching the airlines evolve in that they were just, you know, single flight operators, and then they'd have accidents and incidents and different things. Then government would step in and start regulating, and we got safer and we got safer. And we have an incredibly safe airline industry today because of that. Mission Aviation kind of went through their same thing. They didn't have government regulations, but they started seeing these accidents and incidences happening. And with that started going, okay, well, maybe these airlines have some good policies in place. And we started adopting those and getting some oversight boards to oversee and to do safety audits on us. The safety and mission aviation.
Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And now, back to the broadcast.
So after 9/11, you're in Alaska, and then you're like, okay, now what? Now I can't fly. So you head back home to Nevada.
To Utah.
Yep. You head back home to Utah. Then what?
I'm there in Utah and trying to figure out, okay, I've got to go to school somewhere. And there's this little school in western Nebraska that offered aviation maintenance. So I applied and got accepted. This was all between the middle of September and the beginning of January. My dad was saying that, man, I've always wanted to work on airplanes. So I was just like, well, why don't you quit your job and come with me? 2 days later, my dad comes home and says, so where's this school we're going to? I just gave my boss my 2 weeks notice. So my whole family, my mom, my dad, my sister, and myself all packed up and moved to western Nebraska to go to aviation maintenance school together.
The booming metropolis of western Nebraska.
Yep. So we go to 2 years of aviation maintenance school, get done, and are certified aircraft mechanics, which is the second step that I needed to... Mm-hmm. So then the last step was Bible school. So I ended up doing a Bible school in Central Coast of California. All through this time, I had known about Mission Aviation Fellowship, and that's all I knew. And then a little bit at a time, God brought in the different organizations. Mm. So then I found out about New Tribes Mission, And then I found out about Wycliffe. I started looking at all these and saying, okay, God, which one do I go with? And just that still quiet voice, God just directed me to go with New Tribes Missions. So I went through their evaluation program and then went through their schooling in 2006 to 2007. Finished up that full school. We had a lot of aviation personnel trying to join all at the same time. Okay. So the aviation department did not have room for me. They said, why don't you go and try to do fundraising first? So I would go out and I would talk to churches and they'd say, where are you going? And I'd say, I don't know. And they say, when are you going? And I say, I don't know. I still have another year of training to go. Oh, you're not trained yet?
Says the guy who's an instructor pilot.
Yes, yes. So this bred a lot of confidence in people.
And there's probably no more exposed area in your life than standing in front of people saying, you have a need. Your family literally can't go do the work.
I was single at the time, but yeah, I couldn't go do the work. So after a few years struggling and, you know, not getting anywhere, not knowing, not really having a clear direction on which area of the world to go in, I finally stepped out of New Tribes Mission and ended up getting a job. I was like, God, I know that you called me into missions, but I'm not doing it. So when I got the job, I didn't apply for it. Mm. A friend of mine sent my resume into the chief pilot, and he called me. And I was the best interview candidate. He asked me, do you know anything about us? And I said, no. Well, we're just down the road from you. Like, okay, great. We want you to fly this aircraft. And I said, I don't want to fly that aircraft. It's too big. Can you come in for an interview? Like, no, I'm still on jet lag. Everything he asked, I was like, no, no, no. So great interview. But they hired me.
I can only imagine what the other interviews went like.
I ended up working for them for 9 years.
Was it a maintenance company or something else?
No, we did FedEx contract freight work for them. So a small operator that hauls FedEx packages. While I was there, you tell them, okay, I'm only going to be here a short time because I'm heading back to the mission field. Year one rolls around. Year two, well, I'm not going to be here very long. I'm heading off to the mission field. And that drags on and drags on. And then finally you realize, wait a minute, this is not happening. So maybe I need to think about a career path. So I started making the steps up in the company and adjusting. And then one day, a friend of mine asked me, still interested in getting married? And I was like, yes, I am.
Have I got a plan for you?
Have I got a plan for you? Actually, here's a website. Why don't you? And I was like, thanks. I'm not that desperate. Am I?
A wife and a mission. There you go.
I joined a website called calledtogether.us. It's specifically designed for missionaries to meet other missions-minded people.
It is a distinct culture already for families that have been involved with missions anyway. And of course, we describe it as being third culture families. You have a website focusing on people who may not have a strong attachment to any particular culture, mm-hmm. but they do to the culture of missions. That's probably a perfect segue right now to get to Becky's side of this thing. Were you already on this website? Is that how he found you?
Yeah, or just a little bit before he was. So I had grown up in the church also, and I always wanted to do missions, but I ended up going to college for working with deaf and hard of hearing students, and I worked as a sign language interpreter for a number of years. And I thought, I'll get married, and then I'll do missions, but I like wasn't getting married. And, you know, I was almost 30. And God put it on my mind, like, if you don't do something now, you're just going to keep working this job that you're working. And people were speaking at my church from Africa Inland Mission. I signed up with them, and I actually worked in Tanzania for 3 years. And then I came home. I had also heard about that website, so I maybe got on just a month or two before Travis.
As I understand it, the specialty you have, that ASL and other sign languages are pretty much one of the largest speaker groups in the entire world because of how many people in different countries use that language.
Yes, but each country actually has its own sign language. Interestingly enough, even America, England, and Australia, you have three different sign language systems, even though we
and
all speak
just,
English.
And not just kind of an inflection or something.
They're no, like completely vocabulary. Different. You wouldn't understand it. Or even the alphabet is different between America and England. I wasn't using that at all. I was on a church planning team, so I'm learning language in a folk Muslim people group that was still considered unreached.
So this unreached people group you spent time with for 3 years. Mm-hmm. What was the key thing you took away from that experience with AIM that when you thought about it, this is God preparing you for what was coming next?
I don't know. It's a good experience. The rest of my team stayed on, and I actually didn't stay on. I had developed some health problems that I didn't like really realize what was causing them, so I was able to get that taken care of when I was home. you know, I hadn't had a lot of training, or almost none, before I went there, but I knew I wanted to work in foreign missions. So I think I got a good, like, basis or foundation in, like, what's involved. And then after I met Travis, we knew, like, we both wanted to go back into missions. So we thought, oh, we'll get married, and then we'll stay home for a year, and then we'll go. But it ended up being, like, I don't know, 5-6 years.
There keep being like pauses on this path for you. So
yeah.
you both have plenty of energy. You want to go, you want to be available to God. When you yeah. say yes, you expect God to say yes pretty quick too.
Well, and then we had Nathan, and then jumping around a little, but we looked into AIM Air because they have an aviation program. Mm-hmm. And then we also looked into, you know, where Travis had been before with New Tribes, which is now Ethnos 360. We decided to go with them. When we talked to them, they said, well, get involved at your home church for a couple of years first, because we had just moved and we hadn't been there very long.
Where were you based at the time?
We were in Idaho and got married, and then we moved to Hawaii just 6 months later. We took a job transfer. So we were in Hawaii, I think, when we called them, but we hadn't been there very long. And we came back to Idaho, we got involved in our church. And in the meantime, we started doing foster care. So then we had our daughter Hannah with us, but like things weren't finalized. We didn't know when it was going to be finalized. So we didn't want to start the evaluation and training process when we didn't know, you know, what was going to happen. So then, you know, another year we wait, and then we did the evaluation with Ethnos 360 in March 2021. They wanted us to go back through the training, even though Travis had been through the 2 years of training.
Been there, done that.
This is going to be easy. Well, it actually changed a bit since Travis had gone through it, and I had actually never been through it. So once we started the training, I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I knew all this stuff first time. So we were super thankful. And the order of the classes had changed. It was some new classes that Travis hadn't had yet either. And so we were both really thankful for the training. The church planners stay for 2 years at the training school, but the aviation students just do 1 year and then do 1 year of aviation. We almost were like, wish we could stay for both years.
It impresses you that much that you would like to be in that community.
It sounds like that missions agencies are beefing up their training a little bit more.
New Tribes and, you know, now Ethnos has always had a very substantial training program. Mm-hmm.
I think people go about it in different ways. So the one I was with had done like on the field training. Just people have different training and different strategies. So we don't want to like say anything negative about another group. We're impressed with the training that we got.
It's not just training that's technical as well. They're actually looking after your family and the relationship and how to survive as a family in a third culture.
Things on, we had classes on like church planting and teaching the Bible, but also on like how to learn a language and linguistics and how to raise your children on the field and
interpersonal relationships, how to deal with coworkers,
health issues and cooking.
Yeah, that's great though. A lot of things that you go into a huge decision like this and then you get on the field and flying by the seat of your pants basically to figure things out. But they have given you the tools ahead of time a little bit so that you can at least take what they've given you and adapt it to where you are in the world.
It's like every major missions movement over the centuries, they have to grow up and they go through founders stages and then trying to figure out where they pivot in the next generation. What's their mission? Is it the same? They have to evolve. And now we're dealing with a major shift, as you've seen even working in IT, that their technology itself has become an all-pervasive thing. It's not just a tool anymore. It's a way of life. So in the 21st century, what it means to be on the field is radically evolving.
So when missionaries would go out with Wycliffe or with New Tribes, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, in order to learn a language, they developed a system that they called shoebox. So they would take a shoebox, a physical shoebox, and they would take index cards, and they would write the words that they were learning on these index cards, and they would index them in the shoebox so that they could go back and reference, okay, this word means this, it has these implications, so that when they're translating the Bible, they can get a very accurate translation.
Thought equivalence translating.
And then the first computers came out, and Wycliffe has a very great museum back in Waxhaw, North Carolina. They kind of take you through, starting with the shoebox, and then with the first computer that they sent out there that had like this 4-inch screen that was monochrome and this big old keyboard, and this thing weighed probably 30 or 40 pounds. I don't know how much it weighed because they wouldn't allow me to pick it up, but you know, it was like
it's a big deal. This big
you have thing. Hands on that one.
So then they start using the computer to do the indexing. And now with the iPads and stuff, you can have voice recorders, video recorders, and you can put all of this information in. Well, that's great. but somebody has to write the software for that. Ethnos 360 has been working for several years developing a software package for the iPad. I don't know where the stage is yet, if it's done, if it's not done, but yeah, we do need people to be programmers and to work on that side of things to help speed up the translation process.
My thanks today for the generous gift of time from our guests, Travis and Becky Lessica, now first-year aviation missionaries in Papua New Guinea. You'll hear the rest of their How We Got There story on tomorrow's broadcast. In the meantime, if you'd like to read up on their faith adventure, well, we put a link on the podcast page for this broadcast. You'll find it at CompassionRadio.com.
Compassion Radio is still the radio voice of the global church, and that's completely due to the Lord's provision through you. Give online today at CompassionRadio.com or call us at 1-800-868-2478.
And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877.
We need you, friend, so contact us today.